on God's green earth a great day despite the fact that we have a not-so-great government shutdown. What is a government shutdown? Well, basically, you know, I've opposed all government shutdowns. I think it's an idiotic strategy. It makes no sense. And that's also true of the government shutdown we're going through right now, which is called impeachment trial. Everybody holding his or her breath. Everybody waiting for the very latest from Adam Schiff. Adam Schiff has been speaking for a very, very, very long time. And going through painstaking detail with tapes and documents and charts and quotes from Alexander Hamilton about why it is that President Trump represents such a profound danger to the Republic that he must be removed right now. I've got to tell you, it is shocking to me that there have been brilliant pieces written by a Democrat completely shredding the case to impeach President Trump, and by an appropriate supporter of the president's defense, but speaking out. We're talking here about Jonathan Turley, about the huge mistake that is being made by President Trump's defense team, which is, I don't think, doing a very good job in the president's behalf. In fact, I think both sides are completely misguided, making foolish arguments, disgracing and soiling this entire process, and leading ordinary Americans or any people who are not just utter political junkies to say, let it be over. Let it be finished already. In fact, last night there was lots and lots of coverage, and I think that the best commentary that I heard on what actually happened here, well, it was from sports broadcasters. They had a good sense of this, actually, and I think you can hear their commentary very appropriately.
And that'll do it, this version. And a block to finish. And DeSosa blocks it, and now the bench is empty. Just unnecessary.
Yep. That's not good. This is a punch call.
This is bad.
This is
no. No good. Oh, this is terrible.
There are going to be ramifications for this going forward.
And it's just no point to it. Yeah, that is not acceptable.
Okay, they're right. This is terrible. There are going to be ramifications. This is not acceptable. Actually, they were talking about what happened at a big game between University of Kansas and Kansas State University. By the way, University of Kansas won, and they won big. And what happened with the brawl is there was a University of Kansas player, even though they were ahead by 20 points, who got the ball stolen and then blocked a shot and then apparently taunted the losing player. And then people, and at one point somebody actually picked up a chair and was getting ready to throw it. It was a major brawl. And but I think that the comments, oh, this is bad. Oh, there's no point to it. This is not acceptable. There will be ramifications. All those things are true of the impeachment brawl. And the only thing is that the players for Kansas and Kansas State were pretty skilled basketball players. I didn't see any displays of special skill from any of the impeachment managers on the Democratic side, or frankly, from any of President Trump's defense team. Let me tell you what I think is at its very, very core wrong with arguments that I have heard endlessly, endlessly, endlessly from both sides. One of the things that the Trump team, well, let's do the Democrats first, because they're really the cause of all this. I don't think that Pat Cipollone or, for that matter, Jay Sekulow or any of the president's defenders really want to be there during this impeachment trial or really like the process. So let's first talk about the people who are making this case that the president must be removed. You hear it again and again and again. this is what our founders worried about. This is exactly the situation that they thought we would be in, why we have this institution of impeachment, and why? Because what you have here is a president who is putting his personal interest above the interest of the country, right? Have you heard that once? This is a president who cares only about his personal political interest and is putting that above the national interest. Have you heard it twice? I've heard it. I was actually trying to keep count. I heard it more than 10 times today, listening to cable news and the commentary and then the very, very long presentation. He's still going on, Adam Schiff. We're taking a potty break, guy, or something. This is a Fidel Castro length presentation. In any event, and Adam Schiff kept coming back to this again and again and again. This is President Trump putting himself above the country's interest. Here is the one point that they never acknowledge, that they should. Do I think that an investigation of Burisma or Ukrainian corruption or further investigation or CrowdStrike or the missing server or any of that, do I think that is in America's interest? I don't. But Trump does. He clearly does. In other words, if you believe that Ukraine really did interfere with the election in 2016, all our intelligence agencies say they do not. That is Russian propaganda. But some of the sources that Trump listens to believe that's true. I think the president probably believes that's true. He also really believes that Joe Biden fired a prosecutor who was trying to root out corruption in the Ukraine. And he clearly has been concerned about giving foreign aid to corrupt governments. He was concerned with corruption in Ukraine, and he demanded that that be investigated further. Was it a reasonable demand? No. Was it stupid to make the demand? I mean, really stupid in his first conversation with President Zelensky when they were talking about a White House meeting, when they were talking about aid, military aid. There was no quid pro quo, but the president brought the whole thing up. Was it foolish for him to do so? Was it a mistake? Of course it was. And by the way, this goes to a criticism by Jonathan Turley, and which is stunning to me. Jonathan Turley was such a hero to conservatives when he testified in the House Judiciary Committee hearings, and he was so clear and so forceful about why impeachment was a bad idea. He still thinks it's a bad idea, but he thinks the president's defense team is making a couple of mistakes. One of them that he hints at, he doesn't say it as explicitly as I do, is a mistake that they make all the time when they say, well, this is overturning the results of an election. The reason I believe that's a mistake, to use that argument, which, again, you've heard not once, you've heard it 10, 15, 20 times. Oh, you can't do this. You can't do this because it overturns the results of an election. That would be an argument against having an impeachment clause. Any impeachment overturns the results of an election. When Richard Nixon was about to be impeached and ended up resigning from office, he had just won an election by a far more huge margin than President Trump won. Richard Nixon won a historic landslide, 49 out of 50 states. He had 60% of the vote, popular vote. And yet they went after him appropriately, I think, in an impeachment investigation, and he was forced to resign. Now, the whole idea of impeachment is to overturn the results of an election. What possible impeachment of a president would not be doing that? So when you say, oh, you can't overturn the results of an election, you're saying you can't impeach somebody for anything. The question is what President Trump did worthy of impeachment? Does it rise to that occasion? And this gets into the piece by Jonathan Turley. And he says the trial of President Trump starts this week, and there's no mistaking who's the architect of the defense. Trump himself. The White House declared that Trump's calls and actions on the Ukrainian aid were constitutional, quote, perfectly legal, completely appropriate, and taken in furtherance of our national interests, unquote. In other words, perfect. The call was perfect. The hold on aid was perfect. The eventual release of the aid after the whistleblower complaint was perfect. In my December testimony, the House Judiciary Committee, writes Jonathan Turley, I raised objections to the House rushing the impeachment forward on an incomplete and inferential case. There are ample defenses to be raised on both articles without claiming, implausibly, that this was handled perfectly. Yes, he's right. Trump knows television, and he may know his audience, writes Jonathan Turley. He is staging a trial that portrays the impeachment as the equivalent of a drive-by shooting and himself as the victim. He knows that nuance can destroy such a narrative. This defense is anything but nuanced. It appears premised on two highly contested points. First, there's the position that there was nothing even remotely inappropriate in the president asking a foreign country to investigate a political rival. This position can be accepted or not accepted by senators. However, the second point presents a far more difficult problem for senators concerned about the interpretation of the Constitution. The White House is arguing that you cannot impeach a president without a crime. It is a view, writes Jonathan Turley, that is at odds with history and with the purpose of the Constitution. While framers did not want terms such as maladministration in the standard as dangerously too broad, they often spoke of impeachable conduct in non-criminal terms. What this comes to is, for instance, try to imagine that there is a president who had economic interests in some foreign country. It's a charge that was made against George W. Bush. And the charge was completely untrue in Bush's case. It was the idea that Bush and Cheney went to war simply because they wanted to help companies in which they had financial interests. You remember that? Halliburton. Cheney had been former chief executive officer of Halliburton, and he was going to make money on Halliburton. That's why we went to war. If you could prove that somebody actually took us to war for that purpose, that corrupt purpose, would that be a crime? No. What criminal law is being violated? Would it be worthy of impeachment? Of course it would. And that's the point that Professor Turley is making of George Washington University, who testified so strongly against the impeachment of President Trump. And I wish he had been chosen as part of the defense team. And in fact, I wish we would hear more from Ken Starr and Alan Dershowitz rather than Jay Sekulow and Pat Cipollone, who frankly are basically using White House talking points that everything was fine, everything was perfect, there's nothing even vaguely wrong, and basically just attacking Democrats rather than defending the president and making the case, and they might try to, that while acknowledging that things could have been handled differently and better, and not making the case that you need to have an actual criminal violation, which, by the way, most constitutional experts, virtually all, agree with Turley on this, that no, you don't need a crime in order to have grounds for impeachment. When you talk about treason, bribery, or high crimes and misdemeanors, it includes grotesque things like, well, for instance, taking a nation to war for your own financial interest. Or basically, if you are lying in public consistently on matters of war and peace, matters that are grave and important and serious, and you are knowingly telling lies, doesn't matter that you aren't under oath. That would probably be grounds for impeachment and fall under high crimes and misdemeanors, at least according to most legal experts and constitutional experts. And then I mentioned that there was somebody from the Democratic side, Mark Penn, who was a leading advisor to Hillary Clinton and her campaigns, was part of the Clinton team when Bill Clinton faced impeachment. He wrote a terrific piece. I mean, just an outstanding piece that says end impeachment's government shutdown. And Mark Penn, Democrat, writes this. We are facing an impeachment shutdown, the roadblocking of all our government's institutions for an impeachment that is going nowhere. It will inflame passions, divide our country further, and accomplish nothing of any significance. The cast is now complete with shady characters, wrong bureaucrats, and impeachment prosecutors preening for their close-ups on national TV. As in 1998 and 1999, there's going to be a reckoning when all this is over. I helped to defend President Clinton when the country wasted time then on another impeachment that went nowhere. The president certainly was not innocent of all of the accusations, and he lost his law license and paid significant fines for his actions. But impeachment was rejected, and his hold on the presidency affirmed. His ratings soared. There are few offenses, he writes, that are so grievous as to cause the party in power to give up their party's leader and convict a president. Most charges, even if true, won't reach that high bar for removal. Clearly, the accusations in 1998 and 1999 did not meet that threshold, and neither do the charges against President Trump today, to which I say amen. He's entirely correct. The first count of the two articles of impeachment against President Trump accused the president of abuse of power by withholding aid in an effort to force Ukraine to look into possible corruption on the part of Joe and Hunter Biden. Bringing this up on a call to the president of the Ukraine was probably a boneheaded thing to do, but not an impeachable one, writes Mark Penn. And was not, and aid was actually not held up. No investigation was ordered. The president of Ukraine and other Ukrainian officials deny any pressure was applied to them. Trump's overall policy was, in fact, far more helpful to the Ukrainians than President Obama's policies that denied them much aid for weapons. There was and is no urgent threat to the national security of the United States. He goes on, the last few days in the media have underscored the bias of the media with the release of material from Lev Parnas, who, like Christopher Steele and his dossier before him, or like Michael Avenatti, now out on bail, is a questionable character with obviously wild claims for which he has no proof, including claims against Secretary of State Mike Pompeo and Attorney General William Barr, whom Parnas has never even met. It was a political dirty trick to release his information and call him on the eve of the Senate impeachment trial. And this act alone would have gotten any real prosecutor's case thrown out. Look, his piece is powerful. And in fact, I want to post it up at our website at michaelmedved.com so you can read it for yourself. There is another false case that has been made and has been led to a firing. Somebody actually losing a job that he kind of needed. He was a writer for the Denver Post who said something that was deemed to be utterly unacceptable. What dared he to say? That basically we have two genders. There's male and then there's female. And he's terminated as an opinion columnist. Now, you're allowed to have opinions on everything, on impeachment and on health care and on dealings with Iran. That's fine, whatever you think, whatever you want to say. But when it comes to the opinion that there could be only two genders, that opinion you're not allowed to express, we'll talk to that fired columnist, John Caldera, who is coming right up. He's also the president of the Independence Institute in Colorado. It's a free market think tank. Yes, I have spoken for them in the past. There's also new polling that shows a big surge for a new fourth place finisher, now in the top tier of candidates, suddenly, nationally. Who's rising in the polls? Well, two people. Somewhat surprisingly, one of them is Michael Bloomberg. The other, Amy Klobuchar? Really? She's busy with the Senate. So we'll continue to follow what happens next. And at some point, sometime this hour, probably Adam Schiff will be done speaking. We'll get to that and more. On the Michael Medved show, while the impeachment trial continues, by the way, Adam Schiff finally did, he either finished or he took a potty break, but he went on. Now, he's the lead impeachment manager, so I guess he gets to control who speaks and how much. But this was a tremendous load of Schiff. It really was. He went on at painstaking length, and by the way, well, fairly well written and well delivered. But we will bring you the latest when they go back to game time at impeachment. They're in recess right now. And we take a break with somebody who just said something so outrageous. I mean, so way over the top that it cost him his job. John Caldara is the president of the Independence Institute. It's a libertarian-leaning free market institute in Denver, Colorado. I've had the privilege of speaking for Independence Institute actually a couple of times in the dim recesses of the past, and they're a great bunch and they do a great job. And John Caldara, you said something, I mean, that was really just so outrageous.
I don't want to repeat it on air. I don't know if there was an FCC fine, and I don't want to get your show in
trouble.
Well,
I can for reporting it. And by the way, if people have children with tender ears, they should cover the children's ears, because this is going to shock everybody. You wrote a column in the Gender Post that said there are only two sexes, only two, identified by an XX or an XY chromosome. How dare you, to paraphrase Greta Thunberg.
I did say that. I wrote it down. Actually, I wrote it down in two columns in a row. And for that, I was fired. And what's odd about this, Michael, is I am a pro-gay marriage, libertarian-leaning conservative. I don't care if someone wears a dress. More power to you. I believe that the individual is sovereign. And if you're going to wear a dress and identify as a woman, more power to you. I will protect your right to do so. But in exchange, you must recognize that I am also sovereign, and you have no claim over my language. And I wrote a column about the AP style book, and your listeners might not know that reporters are supposed to follow the AP style when they write, and that's so it's a big book about abbreviations and sentence structure and things like that. But it also pushes a very leftist agenda, and I gave some examples, including you cannot say illegal alien. The AP style book says you have to say undocumented, and the AP book says there are more than one sex, which is blatantly false.
Well, there is more than one sex. There are two.
I'm sorry. There are two.
Okay, good. I mean, I wonder if somebody was going to start claiming there's only one sex, but go ahead.
It'd be a lot easier. I think I got it mixed up with this one, which is there
are more than two.
The proclamation that the word they is now singular. That's where the singular came from. And so I mentioned this, and that, you know, they is no longer just plural, it's also singular. And I said they, the AP, now have made an editorial stance. They've taken a position, and they are promoting one side of this issue. And for that, I lost my job as a freelance Sunday columnist, which is odd. I was the most read columnist there, and it's a struggling paper. So it's odd that they would fire the one that got the most clicks on their page.
Okay, so the question is, this has become a big national issue all of a sudden. Why do they say they fired you? In other words, they have a formal explanation?
There was finally something in the paper today, and what they said is exactly what I said when I wrote a little piece about my firing, that I'm insensitive. That was it. They made it. Here's what they said today. We note some media coverage of this decision has implied we do not want to run conservative columns about issues surrounding sex and gender. Well, no. My point is that the left controls how we speak. So what I was told at the Denver Post, in so many words, was you can have any opinion you wish, but when you express it, you must express it by the terms dictated by your ideological opponents. And that's having no speech at all.
And you know, again, especially if you're talking about something like what you said was there are only two sexes identified by XX or XY chromosomes. That is empirically true. That's provable. This is not something where there's even, well, it's a matter of opinion. Again, because you use the word sexes. You didn't even use the word gender, which is a word that they've played with and altered and twisted like a pretzel beyond all recognition.
And I was very careful to use the word sex because there are those who are born with an XXY and there are some other abnormalities, but overwhelmingly there are two sexes. To say that we cannot state the obvious is just pure Orwellian. We're not allowed to say that 2 + 2 = 4, and we have to use the soft, sticky speech of the politically correct. When I've been doing a fair amount of interviews, one cameraman the other day told me he got pulled into his HR department because he called a couple of women ladies, as in, excuse me, ladies, when in fact they wanted to be called guys. So at this point, if an editorialist like me gets fired for sharing an editorial, what happens to our kids in school? My kids have been asked, what is your preferred pronoun in middle school? We're now teaching kids there are more than two sexes.
And well, it's
not even my issue.
How do you pronounce WOMXN? Because here in Seattle, where I live, they were doing a women's march, but it was not women spelled WOMEN. Or even woman, WOMAN, it was spelled WOMXN. What is that?
I think it's Wimex, I think. What it is speech control. And when you can legally control speech, you can control how people think. What was odd about my situation and being fired for the Denver Post, it was a bit like a Stalinist trial. I hadn't known that I broke the law until I was fired.
Well, okay, so we're running out of time here. What's next for you, John? Are you going to, have you been picked up already by another outlet in Denver?
Oh, several papers have called me up and are interested. More importantly, it's crazy that the media does not let us speak our minds, and that if we are going to speak our minds, we have to use our enemy's point of view. It's no wonder that Trump was elected.
That's exactly right.
No wonder when he says they are the enemy, many of us agree.
Well, it's one of those things where I think President Trump, no matter what you think of his policies or his means of expression, when he uses politically incorrect turns of phrase, when he shocks the world by saying things that are, quote, outrageous, I think they're virtually all Americans, or many, many Americans, say, attaboy. That's the way, and are encouraged by the fact that he can not only get away with it, but seems to get stronger because of it. We'll see what's happening coming right up next in impeachment. John Roberts, actually, who's basically been pretty quiet and dry and laid back, presiding over this proceedings, the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. In the middle of the night last night, he actually scolded both sides in pretty firm terms. Why? We'll get to that and more on the Medved Show. More about John Caldera if you want. It's posted on our web. And on the Michael Medved Show, they ran to close to 2 in the morning last night. That's 2 in the morning Eastern Time. And at the end of the long session, particularly regarding exchanges between Jerry Nadler, who is second only to Adam Schiff in running the job of the House managers, as they're called, in basically prosecuting the case against the President of the United States. And he was answered by the president's private counsel, somebody who is actually he's not. He's the White House counsel. He works for the government. And the White House counsel, Pat Cipollone, was also very outspoken toward the end of a very, 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 very long day. I mean, this is it was getting fairly nasty, particularly late at night. And so before closing up shop for the night, he had an appointment with his regular day job, the Supreme Court of the United States, at 8 the next morning. The Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, the Honorable John Roberts, said this.
I think it is appropriate at this point for me to admonish both the House managers and the President's counsel in equal terms to remember that they are addressing the world's greatest deliberative body. One reason it has earned that title is because its members avoid speaking in a manner and using language that is not conducive to civil discourse. In the 1905 Swain trial, a senator objected when one of the managers used the word pettifogging, and the presiding officer said the word ought not to have been used. I don't think we need to aspire to that high a standard, but I do think those addressing the Senate should remember where they are.
Remember that the public is actually listening. Well, some people at 2 a.m, but that ultimately history is listening. God is listening. Last night, Adam Schiff, leading the charge for the House impeachment managers, seemed to be upset at the late hour. Here's what he said.
There is a reason, though, why we are still here at, is that 5 till midnight? There's a reason why we're here to 5 to midnight. And that's because they don't want the American people to see what's going on here. They're hoping people are asleep. And you know, a lot of people are asleep right now, all over the country, because it's midnight.
The problem is there are probably people who are asleep in the Senate chamber. Look, this is hard for U.S. senators. These are people who are used to talking. They're not allowed to talk. The Senate rules for an impeachment trial is they're not allowed to bring their electronic devices in with them. They're not allowed to text, to talk on the phone. They just have to sit there and listen. And honestly, without some kind of, well, at least a double espresso or something, if it's 1 a.m. and you've been there and you've been listening to these various people, Adam Schiff and Jay Sekulow and Pat Cipollone and Jerry Nadler, and you've been listening and listening and listening and listening, this is there are Eighth Amendment protections against cruel and unusual punishment. But I think this particular impeachment engagement is an example of cruel and unusual punishment, which is prohibited by the same constitution that both sides claim they're defending. Mark Penn, who was a former campaign advisor to Hillary Clinton, a former White House advisor to Bill Clinton, who's now head of the Harris poll, and he's an independent thinker. And we're trying to get him on because he wrote, I think, the best piece about the first day of the impeachment trial. He said this. He said, "We live in a country in which people have the rosiest view of their own personal lives that I have ever recorded." This is as in his day job as a pollster. "While at the same time, they have the dimmest view of their political figures and institutions. Congress has a 23% approval rating, and majorities dislike the Democrats. Majorities dislike the Republicans, and majorities dislike the president. They are now tearing each other apart in a process that will have no tangible benefit for the voters, and our parties and our democracy will all look worse when this thing is over. Yes, there will be a reckoning for the unsuccessful litigant here." That means the Democrats. "Although the Democrats have been brilliant in elevating this matter, bringing together their caucus, dominating the news media, and engineering parliamentary maneuvers to their advantage. Imagine," writes Mark Penn, "if all of this energy had not been put in, had been put into fixing health care or fixing immigration, they would be light years ahead of the Republicans, rather than facing a possible electoral boomerang when all this fails. He's exactly right. And that is what the Democrats are looking at. And partially, that's provoked already a little bit of a boomerang in terms of President Trump. He spoke a little bit earlier today about his reactions to the impeachment trial. Listen.
Hoax. It's a total hoax.
How do you think
a perfect
your team
conversation.
Performed?
I think the team was really good. And the facts are all on our side. The Republican Party has never been this unified. You saw that 195 to nothing, I guess, right. Twice. In fact, we got three Democrats voting for us. That was with the House.
Do you think there'll be witnesses, Mr. President? Or do you have
I really don't know. I think that if everybody tells the truth, it's perfect. But all you have to do is read the transcript. If you take a look at the transcript, and it's really two transcripts. It's, you know, I had a first call, which was perfect, and I had a second call, which was perfect. Do you notice they don't mention the calls, though? They never mention the calls. They talk about everything but the calls. All they have to do is read the transcripts. I put it out all the time. The other thing is, speak to the president of Ukraine. He's been great, I have to tell you. And his foreign minister has been great.
Right.
They constantly say there was no pressure. They don't even know what we're doing. They think it's crazy. So they got the money. In fact, they got it very early. President Obama gave them nothing. He gave them pillows and sheets and things like that. And I gave them tank busters.
Okay. Just in fairness, Adam Schiff, in his very, very, very long remarks today, he did talk about the transcript. And he did acknowledge President Zelensky's affirmation that he did not feel pressured. But he basically didn't believe Zelensky. He thought he was doing that under pressure. Trump went on to give his glowing opinion of the chair of the Judiciary Committee, the Honorable Jerry Nadler. Listen.
Gerald Nadler, I've known him a long time. He's a sleazebag. Everybody knows that. Pat Cipollone is a high-quality human being. I was very impressed with Pat. He had great emotion yesterday. Pat's a brilliant guy, but I've never seen that emotion. And that's real emotion. That's because he knows this is a hoax. And I was very proud of the job he did. I've known Jerry Nadler for a long time. He opposed many of my jobs. I got them all built, very successfully built in New York.
He's talking about Jerry Nadler, who is a member of Congress, basically since the earth cooled in Manhattan. When we come back, Bernie Sanders has, first of all, he is under attack, and really nasty attack, by Hillary Clinton. And some people are saying this signifies that Hillary Clinton is jumping back into the race. Hillary Clinton is also being sued for $50 million by one of the current Democratic candidates for president. Democratic candidates for president. Why? We will get to that. We'll also be talking about the hypocrisy of AOC, of Bernie Sanders, of Hillary Clinton, of Adam Schiff, all the rest of them, in their hatred of billionaires. That and more in This Greatest Nation on